This is the SF Productions Podcast Network. How I Got My Wife to Read Comics, Episode 318. This episode was pre-recorded. Can a comic collector of over 25 years get his wife to read them? Will she let him keep them? Learn more in this podcast. Let's go to the comic book lounge with Mindy and Mark.
Let's check out the hero rehab expert. It's Jeff Johns 101. This is How I Got My Wife to Read Comics for Sunday, August 24th, 2014. I'm Mark.
And I'm Mindy. Just a reminder, you can go to sfpodcastnetwork.com to get the feed, other SF podcasts, and blogs, or you can subscribe via iTunes where you can leave us a review.
You can email sfpodcastnetwork@gmail.com, like us at facebook.com/sfppn, follow us on Twitter at sfppn, check out tumblr.com/blog/sfppn, or call us at 614-321-9737. That's 614-321-9SFP. We are taping this in advance. Jeff Johns has become really one of the major architects of DC Comics. He actually serves as the chief creative officer, and he's probably best known for taking third-tier characters and making them interesting.
So I just don't get, though, how somebody that young can come in and just take over a company.
Yeah.
I mean, he basically came in and took over the creative aspects of everything at DC.
Very much so. Well, let's find out how by going to class. He was born in Detroit in 1973. He found a box of old comics in his grandmother's attic. Of course, they were DC Comics. His first new comics included Crisis on Infinite Earths, which is the same series that pulled me back into comics while I was in college. It's all because of that summer job in Akron, Ohio, and the comic shop that was across the street, and lunchtimes with nothing to do.
See?
That's where
comic shops can pull people back in if they're correctly placed.
Yep. So he attended Michigan State and then moved to L.A. Now, according to the myth, now whether this actually happened or not,
I'm sure he plays it up, you know.
Oh, yeah. But supposedly, he cold called director Richard Donner for an internship and got the job and eventually became a production assistant for him. And then during the making of the film Conspiracy Theories, this is 1997, in New York City, he met DC editor Eddie Braganza and ended up touring the offices. And this got him back into comics after he liked them as a kid. Braganza asked him to pitch some ideas, and he came up with the idea for Stars and Stripe, which was the title that introduced the current Stargirl. This teenage girl who finds this trunk of her uncle, who turns out to be the original Stripesy from the team of Star Spangled Kid and Stripe.
And you can tell even from this that he must have had a substantial knowledge of DC history.
Oh, yeah.
In order to come up with that idea. And that's probably his first, where he gets a reputation for rehabbing characters.
Sure.
Pulling characters out that haven't been used for a long time or haven't been used well.
Right. So he then wrote that title. And James Robinson was writing JSA at the time and was so impressed with John's work, he offered him co-writing duties. So he went straight from third or fourth rate character that had not been used in decades to one of the two major groups of the DCU, the JSA.
And they even brought Stargirl into the JSA at that point.
Yeah. And this was a major run of the title from 2000 to 2006 and then 2007 to 2009, which reestablished the team and introduced a lot of new characters into the DCU. And at one point, they even brought in the Superman of the Kingdom Come continuity into the JSA, which was really fascinating. So this side job of writing comics became his full-time job at that point.
Isn't it sort of ironic that he's in charge now and where's James Robinson to be found?
Yeah, pretty much. Of course, he's really well known for a very long run on The Flash from 2006 to 2005 and then 2010 to 2011, when his big thing was he completely updated the rogues as a concept and made them compelling characters, because until then they were basically third string gimmick villains.
Right.
You know, Heat Wave and Captain Cold and Mirror Master and Weather Wizard and, you know, a lot of stuff that came out of the Silver Age. And he really enjoyed taking Silver Age concepts and then making them relevant. He did some minor work at Marvel, doing work on the Avengers from 2002 to 2004. And then he came back to DC, where he performed his first real rehab work. And he turned third-tier hero Hawkman into a fascinating character, the first one to really have done that, from 2002 to 2004, and then made the Teen Titans relevant and fun in the 21st century from 2003 to 2007.
Too bad they aren't still relevant and fun.
Yeah. But his major accomplishment really at DC was revitalizing Green Lantern.
Now, his major accomplishment may have been, but I don't appreciate it at all.
Because Green Lantern until then was very much third tier. And now I think most people would consider Green Lantern to be only a step behind a Batman or Superman.
And it certainly got just as many titles as Batman or Superman.
Absolutely. So he did the Green Lantern Rebirth miniseries and then did the subsequent ongoing title. So that was all the way from 2004 all the way to 2013. So it went actually through the change for the New 52. And this was, frankly, I think a mistake here, because by this point, Johns was one of the people who had enough power at DC to go, oh, yeah, I know you're resetting everything,
but we don't want to reset ours.
So they didn't.
And it's very confusing in this title and in Batman that they just kept going.
Right. Johns and Morrison basically just said, nope, hands off our characters. We know what we're going to do with them. We don't care if you're doing a reset. But during this run of Green Lantern, he introduced the idea of two Green Lanterns to a sector. He introduced the Crayola Corps. All the various color lanterns, which an idea that had barely been touched in 50 years of the character. The characters of St. Walker, Larfleeze, Atrocicus, Dexstar, the Indigo Tribe, the Sinestro Corps, and the Sinestro Corps event. The Alpha Lanterns, the Blackest Night event, Necron, making Black Hand a badass, the new GL Simon Baz, Guardians becoming the bad guys for the first time, and the first lantern, Voltoom, taking a concept from a JLA story in the Silver Age and saying, oh, that's what Voltoom was. He then shepherded some of the major crossovers of the late 2000s. You had Infinite Crisis in 05 and 06, the Weekly 52 Maxi Series, 06 and 07, that was co-written with Rucka, Wade, and Morrison. You had Blackest Night from 2009 to 2010, and that started just as a GL-only crossover, but it became so well-known and popular that it ended up kind of folding out to the rest of the DCU. And then it was followed by Brightest Day, which frankly wasn't as good. And in the middle of all this, he co-wrote a fantastic Action Comics storyline with his former boss, Richard Donner, and Gary Frank.
What was that storyline?
That was the whole thing where it was back to Krypton and bringing Zod and Non into the DCU. So this was some really excellent work. And he reintroduced Booster Gold.
Yay, Booster!
And then he finished out the pre-New 52 with the event that took us to the New 52, Flashpoint. So then we have, for the New 52, he actually made Aquaman compelling in a new series, a character who would basically be considered a joke.
It is just too bad that that title didn't continue on in the same way.
It's now kind of muddled. He created a new version of the Justice League in their own title. He introduced a new Justice League of America. He finished out his GL run. He wrote the Batman Earth One graphic novel, was the mastermind of Forever Evil this past year, and then just took over the Superman title with John Romita Jr.'s art. So this guy's been very busy. And then if this weren't enough, he wrote for television, Justice League Unlimited episodes. Young Justice. He was the co-creator of the cartoon series, Blade, Smallville, Arrow, and the upcoming Flash pilot episode is being written by Geoff Johns, and the DCU online game.
Do you think that maybe he's a little bit like Stan Lee and he just gets credit for a lot of stuff that maybe is not completely his?
I don't think you can get away with that anymore.
Okay.
I really don't think you can. I'm pretty sure he's actually generating all of this. And then he's a producer on the Green Lantern movie. Well, you can't win them all. Batman versus Superman and the announced Flash movie and the TV show. And when he's not doing all that, he helps run a comic book shop in California.
Well,
I don't know when he has time to do that. I'm guessing name is on it.
His name is on it. He makes appearances every now and then so that people come into the shop.
Right.
Now, to me, some of John's work is very, it reminds me a little bit of Grant Morrison, not in the style, but in the idea that when it's good, it's very, very good.
Mm-hmm.
And when it's not, it's bad. Like the GL movie.
Yeah, certainly he has missteps. There's no question. And when those he has missteps, they're big ones because he has so much power at DC that
he can make big ones.
Yeah,
that he's
and
got
people
the
won't
power
say no.
To. Yeah.
Right. Mm-hmm. Right. So Geoff Johns is this larger than life figure at DC, and one has to wonder how much longer he's going to want to be on the DC side. If he's going to start looking across the way over at Marvel and going, well, I did all these great things at DC. Maybe I should be looking and considering Marvel.
But I don't think that will happen. For one, I think messing up the Green Lantern movie when their movie franchises are so
true,
important and so
true.
Big is not going to make them want him so much.
Right. True.
Plus, if you have all that knowledge of DC history, do you have room in there to have all the same things for Marvel?
One would think it would be impossible
to
do that. And there is the fact that when you look at the DC movies, as chief creative officer, he's the one who's supposedly moving this stuff forward, and yet here we are waiting for another 2 years before the next DC movie.
Now, if he could go in there and make Marvel comics like DC comics, and then they could bring the Marvel movie guy over to make DC movies.
Yeah, they could do a swap. That would be great. So before we get out of here, it's time to play America's Fastest Growing New Game Show.
Guess who's on the cover of Entertainment Weekly? Now, with any thought at all on this, Mark, we shouldn't play for more than 10 seconds.
Wow.
Guess who's on the cover?
So it's Robin Williams.
Yes. All right.
Da, da, da.
That was a big clue.
Yeah, that was a big clue.
Now, interestingly enough, the online, the e-version of the magazine,
right,
has the fall movie preview cover with different people than the print edition does.
Oh, okay.
Interesting.
Yeah. Well, want to remind you to go to sfpodcastnetwork.com to get the feed, other SF podcasts and blogs, including our From the Pop Culture Bunker video podcast. You can subscribe via iTunes, and please leave us a review.
You can email sfpodcastnetwork@gmail.com, like us at facebook.com/sfppn, follow us on Twitter at sfppn, or check out tumblr.com/blog/sfppn. Call us at 614-321-9737. That's 614-321-9SFP.
Thanks for listening, everybody.
Bye.
Bye-bye.